This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today I have with me...
Diana Stafford.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Diana, you came to Palmerston North when?
In 1965. The vet school had opened and my husband had applied for and got a position at the new vet school.
Oh, okay.
So we were living in Otorohanga and... we probably could have stayed there quite comfortably for the rest of our working lives. But it might seem a strange expression. He didn't want to be pulling out calves in his old age.
Yeah.
We moved down to Palmerston North to the new vet school.
That was earlier. That was when it was still an agricultural college at Matthew, was it?
No, it was already a full accredited university.
Okay.
The early days, of course, had been a branch of, part of it had been a branch of Vic.
Yes, yeah.
But anyway, Ian had already been a student, an ag student at Massey years and years before he did, before he did vet.
Mm-hmm.
And vet had to be done in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
There were no vet schools here, so he, along with a lot of other Kiwis, went through Brisbane, Queensland University. So anyway, we moved to Palmerston and we rented a house and decided that we would build, and we spent the first winter in the rented house going around looking at sections. So we spent... weekends going around looking at sections. We found exactly what we wanted, and the result is that we're still here. We bought a paddock with weeds and six sections on it.
Okay, and this is in Slats Road. This was all undeveloped then?
No, it had all been market gardens, farming, horse racing stables. The area had a golf club. It had the original race course, which was down where Awatapu is now, which had also been a farm beforehand. So we built here and moved in on the 23rd of October 1966. And we've been here ever since. So we raised three sons. The neighbours, who turned out had been at Massey when Ian was an ag student, and that was John Bolton, who was doing horticulture, and he became director of parks and reserves when he came back to Palmerston.
Oh, yeah.
And the other neighbours also had two sons, so it was very much a little, it was still quite rural in a way. The road had only just been sealed the year before, 1965. The primary school, Riverdale, had been opened the previous year, 1965. There was a dairy herd just along the road. Ian used to do their TB testing. We had dairy cattle, beef cattle and sheep grazing just over the road. Potama Road then was Milford Road. Came off Long Milford Road, which is one of the earliest streets.
So Long Milford Road was all developed, but this area came for housing, but this area came later.
Yes. People wondered why we would go so far out, it seemed, away from the city centre. But it suited, because Ian visited not just Massey farms, but they took over a lot of farms that had been administered by the dairy company vet at Rongatea. So he then became one of the vets servicing Rua Downs, Glen Arua, almost to Foxton. There were a few farms out towards Colleton, plus all the Massey farms. So it was just.
So like he was working as a vet for me, or as a lecturer teaching, doing both?
Both.
Okay.
Because he would do his farm calls, whether they were on Massey farms or other farms. And he would also lecture, stand up and lecture. Mm. But he had vet students, final year vet students, and a fourth and fifth year vet students with him.
Yeah.
There was a team and, on a roster of who was going to be on duty with the duty vet. So they would travel in the car with him to get part of their practical training.
Right.
Our boys went to Riverdale School, they went to Cubs here, they went to Scouts here, and eventually we built, or the group, the family in the district, built a scout hall on the council land down by the treatment station, by the racecourse. We helped.
Would that have been a long way out by then, or was there much housing in that area?
There was housing. There was very ancient housing in the area with big blocks.
Mm.
In fact, I was just looking at Gary O'Neill's West End book again.
Yes,
are you familiar with that?
Yes, yes.
Excellent. Yeah. You can see on the back cover of it four of the old homesteads in this district.
Yes, yeah.
As a child, I lived in Palmerston with our family, my family, during the war years in Park Road.
Mm.
Cook Street was away. That was the edge of the town in those days. It seemed miles away to a child. So friends asked why we built out here. It was so that Ian could had easy access from Massey home and then out to most of the farms that were out in that direction, out to the west.
Yeah. And these were all sort of quarter-acre sections, were they?
Yes. This is just under a quarter of an acre. Yeah. It was interesting. We thought that back sections, which we love, were considered to be less desirable than street sections. They were also a bit cheaper.
Well, they'd be quieter from the traffic.
When we moved down here, we still had two cars. One was, we just got to the stage where...
You had two cars in 1966?
Well, Ian changed his car every year. Because they were on the road all the time.
Yes.
In a farm situation up in the Waikato or King Country. So we had just reached the stage where we could retain the previous year's car.
Okay.
And that meant I had a car to do the shopping or take the kids to Kindle.
That would be quite unusual, wouldn't it?
I don't know. I didn't ever think about it.
Hmm.
But anyway, we've finally sold the last Herald 2 years ago. They were a marvellous car. They were the only, it was only Heralds or Volkswagens that new vet students coming into the workforce could afford to get.
Oh, okay.
They had no salary behind them.
Yes,
until their first paychecks came through, and that was as much as the banks would lend these penniless lads, mostly lads in those days. So that's how we ended up with two cars. Now, what was I saying there? I had a full-time job with eventually three little boys under five for a while. Also, we didn't have initially after-hours phone service. In the early days in Otorohanga, before we got a phone person, we used to have to know where the vet was going and be able to ring the previous farm if other calls came in, or the farm he was due at, and say, could he also call on John Smith? He's got a cow down, or bull with a broken leg. Or
So you were doing the sort of office backup.
Yes. So that was the same. Also, very few staff, of course, when we first arrived at Massey Vet School. And as a family, we would go out and feed the animals at the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
That's how many years ago?
Yeah, 1960s. Nearly 60 years.
A lot of developments at Massey and in this area now. This area has become highly desirable. Going back to the little cars, selling the second little Herald meant we could buy a section. And it was £880 or dollars. Cheaper than the ones in front.
I think you were just before they changed to dollars, was it?
What year was that? There was a jingle that said...
67 or something?
Yes.
67, I think.
So it must have
been before
pounds.
My time here, but
So everything has evolved around us. People say, are you still there? Yes, we are. We wouldn't
swap. The environment changes for you.
We've enjoyed being just over the fence from the school. And for years, the understanding was that there would be no building behind us to close us, the three of us, in. We have three houses down here. And unfortunately, they moved in relocatables. And my experience with education groups, there was no way they were ever going to let them go. They were only going to be there for about 8 years.
That's the school grounds, right behind you?
Yes. Prior to that, we just had a stile and a hurricane wire fence along the back, as all these sections did.
So those buildings are classrooms?
They were prefabs, which are joined up and very much permanent after over 20 years. And the school continues to grow.
I'm in a similar position. The house I'm in, they built with a view out over the park, and then they put the community hall just over the fence.
They wanted a green outlook for the children. The first thing they did was stick posters and things over all the windows. Very odd. Prior to that, we just had a stile on the back fence. The school was still very new. They had some jungle gyms. And if anyone got a bad bump or bruise or something, they knew that they could come over and get a bag of frozen peas to put on them. I used to get called on occasionally to go over and just stay with a class if there was a meeting on or something like that.
So the boys could go to school, just climb over the back fence and
And it was interesting to watch, because, well, watch all the children. But the boys would be coming home quite happily, and then they'd remember something which had upset them during the day. And by the time they climbed the fence, they were suitably upset. It was quite funny. It was a good school. And it was a good centre for the district. The school used to put a newsletter in all the neighbours' boxes once a month, or at least once a term. And you knew what was going on, and you were welcomed over to watch sports days and
So I suppose at that time, if it's a lot of new housing and young families, and now they've all grown up, the children have left, and now it's a neighbourhood of older
and it was
retired
people. Get behind the school community, because we all helped fundraise for the hall and the school pool, the playground, things like that. We all used to take turns over the summer to sign up to be pool people, and we would get keys for a fee, and that meant that you could go over and be on duty to open up at the weekends or at different times, so the local kids could all come swimming. There would be two of us on duty, and somebody would volunteer to keep the chlorine or whatever it was up to the right level. and then we'd all lock up and make sure everything was good.
Would you recall if there was a temperature required for the water for them to say this?
No,
is
I don't
enough?
Remember anything Nothing like that.
No. Okay. Mm. Yeah, someone did tell me 20 degrees and it's okay for school pools, but.
Oh, my word, we didn't hear anything about that.
I remember as a child in England, so the swimming pool, the water always felt incredibly cold.
You'd break the ice before
you got in. I would wonder what the temperature actually was. And was it just that you it feels cold or it actually was cold?
That was probably the days when we had cold showers if the water ran out anyway.
Yes. And a lot of them, there'd just be the sunlight and the ground temperature heating the water.
So. Yes.
Yeah.
I think they maybe have a heating system with a coiled hose.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know what they do now, but there was a move over at the school that there was enough on the curriculum already and the school pool was not being used at all. And they wanted to get rid of it, but I hope they never do.
It still has a pool, does it?
Because
a lot of schools, they're no longer having them because the cost of running them, then they had to be fenced, and the requirements increased, and it became costlier and so on.
Well, it has a very good fence. But also the community used to watch.
Yeah, that's what you were saying. There were parents, because
we kept an eye on things.
Yeah, my understanding was more, well, in my experience, families associated with a school, not this one, but the schools I was involved
with. It was the Riverdale School.
But we found if you've got children at the school, you could get the I think that was a key, and you could go down.
Yes.
But there was no supervision. It was only if you're there supervising that there was any
There were set times for the general swimming.
Okay,
I remember one child, I didn't realise that, he used to follow you around. All the kids are different, of course. There were the bullies and the splashers and the jumpers when they're not meant to. This little child used to follow me all the time. Mrs. Lady, Mrs. Lady. They're all different.
Yeah.
But it was good. But then that was in the public opening time. But the families individually could buy a key for the holidays and take their kids.
Their own time as well.
Which was good.
Did you find then that most children could swim, or they all learned to swim?
Yes, I think they probably did.
Ours
certainly did, because we wouldn't take them out, let them go out in our little boats or canoes until they could swim.
So where did you go with those? Was that out at Foxton?
No, the kids used to... Well, we did join the sailing club. Excuse me. Yes, a lot of town people were down there. I can remember another local resident, Jack Register.
Oh, yes. The artist.
He was the one, the boat club used to be amongst all those big pine trees out down at Foxland Beach, beyond a skating rink, I think. And all the boats, little boats, were stored under a sailing club building. It was an old building from memory. And then Jack used to take all the little boats down to the river for launching. Okay. And it always reminded me of that toy with the mother duck and all the little quacky ducks behind that a lot of New Zealand children had as little ones. With Jack sitting on the tractor. And all the little yachts on the sledge behind, dragging across the sand. No, they were good days. Yes, our kids all learned to sail.
Yeah. Was that after the time that there was, I know, a lot of, especially farming families, I think, that the man would stay on the farm because of the milking and so on, but the family would be camping down at Foxton Beach for about a month.
We did a similar thing. We hired a cottage at Waitariri when the kids were quite little. And Waitariri, Hamataki, one of the beaches.
Yes.
And it was close enough for Ian to come back to work. In one case, Waitariri wasn't. We didn't take enough blankets or something basic. So he called in and picked up more from home and checked on the cat and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And came back to us at night.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that was ideal. Palmerston was a good place to be.
Yeah.
Still is. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Some do say Palmerston, because we're not coastal, we lose out. But we had some visiting professors from, I think it was San Francisco, and said, how long does it take you to get to the beach? And they said, about an hour and a half. So we're actually a bit closer from here.
Yes. So, yeah. No, our kids, once they started to drive and they could take the Herald, would head off to Hibbertaggy and they could go down swimming.
Yeah, yeah.
We could go white baiting.
But
it was an ideal place here for bringing up boys.
Yes,
it was everything you could imagine.
Yeah.
And then they could go skiing in no time at all. They could go out for rock and scuba stuff on the other coast.
Yeah, yeah.
We could have great holidays or outings on the coast here with all the driftwood and little huts and all
sorts
of things.
Was the gorge walk a big thing then?
No. Not when the kids were little.
No.
Young, no.
Okay.
I think there might have been a track at the other end.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it does. So its glory days was before all the slips in the.
And then the kids used to do a lot of tramping, and we got to know a lot of the other parents because we would take carloads of kids to the head of a road, is it Putara? Oh, the one where they could do the crossing near Ikitahuna, and we'd all drop our kids off, and then we'd go so many hours later or next day or whatever to the head of another road on the other side of the ranges.
Oh, and pick them up.
And pick them up.
Mm. Okay.
Yes. Mm. It was good. We still keep in touch with quite a few of those parents. And like ours, all their kids are scattered far and wide.
Yeah.
Some of them would come back to Palmerston.
So yours are your boys overseas or elsewhere?
They have all been overseas. The oldest one and the youngest one are back here.
Yeah.
And their kids, one's children have gone to Riverdale and Awatapa, as ours did.
They've come back to Palmerston North.
Yes. Another one is out on the Ashes Bunnyfall Road now. No, Ashes Mahogany Road. And his children go to country schools.
So what are they doing? Happy.
One is a house husband now. He was an engineer, or is an engineer. The youngest one does GPS mapping, and he is on his card. He works for another local government here. What do they call it? Risk analysis, something or other, hazards.
Oh, yes.
Things like that. Yeah. But his main thing is mapping, and those are fascinating. I can show you early photographs of all this area. Via satellite. So there's a steady workload there.
Yeah.
The middle one trained as a forestry engineer. So two went through Canterbury and one went through Massey. They did ag science here. One did civil engineering at Canterbury, one did forestry engineering at Canterbury. So the middle one got work in his first year after graduation, went to the States, worked on a ski field, and then with his friend, who was also forestry, went to South America, did a lot of climbing in the Andes and exploring, and then decided he would do postgrad of a master's. So was accepted by Corvallis, Oregon State University, came back here and worked to fund himself. Manawatu Ashfelts, which is a name that's not known now. He worked for them doing all sorts of things, as did the engineering one, to raise enough money. Went over, did his master's, met a girl from Oregon, and was offered work and took it. from a Kiwi-owned firm in Oregon, Logging Engineering International, which used to tender to survey blocks of forest all over the place. So Alan ended up working on all sorts of outback places in Alaska, offshore islands, federal land mostly, British Columbia, down in the States, Oregon. They had three different contracts in Tierra del Fuego, some on the Chilean side, some on the Argentinian side, one at Ruatoria.
Mm-hmm.
So they spent a whole summer at the hotel in Ruatoria in New Zealand, which was great. So he is back still. He married his Oregon girl, and they've lived in Juneau for over 20 years now. He gave up forestry engineering and is an engineer with the Juneau and Borough City Council. Doing similar stuff, planning roading, drainage, bridging. Also took on a new job for a while within that position of being master of the quarry. They have limited roading but need of metal for all sorts of roadworks. So he learned more about explosives and got his ticket, was in charge of the quarry. Still skis, as all our boys have.
So you've got two that are local and one
who came, was able to get home for our wedding anniversary in November for the first time with his wife, first time for 5 years, and that was good.
Well, you're lucky that the two found satisfactory sort of lives just locally.
Well, what they did in their childhood led to what they did in their adulthood, if you like. So there's everything for them. Good place to be.
This is part one of two. Listen next week for part two. Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.